Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me on the Negotiations Ninja podcast. You've got Mark here. We have Dan Lappin on the show today, founder and CEO of Lappin 180, which is a sales training and coaching company. He's also the host of a brand new sales podcast called Breaking Sales, where he is achieving fantastic success. And after you hear this interview, you will understand why. Because Dan knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about. I really enjoyed this discussion with Dan. We got into a deep discussion about bias and how bias can affect your sales and negotiations and how you can get rid of different biases going into sales and negotiations to get better results. I highly encourage you to reach out to him and his company. Great stuff. Really, really enjoyed it. Take some notes. Let me know what you think. Enjoy. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Mark, I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm awesome, man. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Very pleased to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you, man. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. The thing that I love about your content is that you don't shy away from the details, as you say. So it's going to be a very exciting time. But before we get into that, I would love for you to just tell the listeners who you are and what you do.
So I'm the president of Lappin 180. My name is Dan Lappin. And the firm is Lappin 180. We teach the opposite of traditional selling. So we teach people to stop selling. Because if you take a look at the behaviors and the actions that are conducive to selling, they're not really aligned with the behaviors and the actions conducive for another human being slash a prospect or client making a change. You know, I always tell people, Mark, that prospects and clients, they never make a sales decision, but they will struggle to make a change decision.
That is fascinating. So there's a lot to what you just said, and I want to break it down in just a little bit. But I also want to give a shout out to your podcast. You also have a great podcast.
Yeah, we just started. We don't have the tenure that you do. So congratulations to you on that. But we are 7 or 8 episodes deep, and we've been ranking in the top 100 in terms of business podcasts since we started. And we're getting record downloads. We're very excited about that.
Yeah, you should be excited about that. That's huge. Stick with it. It can be crazy sometimes, but it's so worth it. I mean, the quality of people that you'll get to meet and have discussions with is just amazing. Okay, I'm going to stop with that. I want to get back to what you just said. You said that the way that we sell is not necessarily the way that people interact, if I could paraphrase what you said. What do you mean by that?
When I think about sales and I think about negotiations, they're very similar. In fact, I feel like sales is one big negotiation. So, you know, you have a sales professional, Mark, they're going into a meeting with a prospect, we'll say, all right? And that sales professional has biases that they bring into the meeting. You know, they might want to get another meeting or some kind of commitment. They may want to win the deal. They might want to be able to share their story or share their expertise, but the sales professional wants something and it's a bias. And then you have the prospect or the client coming in from the other side, and they have biases as well. You know, they have biases where they feel they have a loyalty to maybe who they currently do business with. They might be attached to the hard work and the effort and, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears of the strategy or the program that they put in place. It's their baby. And then they have that natural sense of pride. So you got these two human beings going into this conversation, whether it's just a sales conversation or a negotiation, and both are bringing biases into it. And so what we teach is we teach sales professionals a method for removing their biases. Because we all know when it comes to sales and negotiation, the more objective you are, the more objective the other person will be. Or the less objective you seem to be, the less objective your counterpart would be. So what we do, Mark, is we teach people how to remove their attachments to outcomes, We teach them to remove that scarcity of, man, I hope this goes well, or what happens if I don't win the deal, or what happens if the negotiation blows up. You never want to enter a conversation with any of those thoughts in your head. Sales is about, I want to make the sale. I want to prove my expertise. I want to find that prospect's pain. But the prospect makes the change. They're the one who has to go through the uncertainty and debate the risk of doing something different. And I'll add this one last thing that we can all probably agree on, your listeners and all that, where we as human beings, we tend to always overestimate what we currently have and who we do that with. And then we underestimate what we could gain by doing something different.
One of the things that you said there strikes me as super powerful, and so many people don't understand it. You said we need to remove our attachment to the outcomes. What do you mean by that? And why is emotional attachment to outcomes so dangerous?
Great question. You think about it for your listeners, you know, whether they're at the beginning of a negotiation or at the end, if we get attached to a certain outcome, where we're thinking, my outcome is that we're going to be able to get this deal done, and we're going to do it in a way that we're going to cover parameters of A, B, and C, whatever those parameters are. That person has now set the outcome as we need to accomplish A, B, and C. What happens now is when that person enters the conversation or the negotiation is that they will have a tendency to only listen for things that lend themselves to accomplishing whatever A, B, and C were. They will only maybe ask questions that lend themselves to accomplishing A, B, and C. And so what happens is we end up handcuffing ourselves. We're not listening as openly and fluidly as we should. We limit our questions to those that we think will guide the conversation in the direction that we want to go. And if we do both of those things, Mark, I know I've been there, you limit your learning. And if you limit your learning, what you're really doing is you're limiting your ability to help this other person either think through change, or you're limiting the ability to have a fair, equitable, and strong negotiation. That's what I mean when I say you kind of end up handcuffing yourself. Expectations add pressure, and pressure usually disrupts our skill and it disrupts our flow.
Yeah, I love that. There's a bunch of work that was done, and I think it was Cialdini that did it, around the illusion of control bias that exists within a lot of sales and negotiations, where he talks about people have this weird illusion of control of the outcome of the events when there may not necessarily be any causal link. And there's been a bunch of studies that have been done around how people perceive control in a negotiation or in sales, and how they believe that they can control the outcome of the event. The weird thing is that we can drive the negotiation or the sale forward based on improving our tactics or our strategies or whatever it may be. But all we're doing is we're improving the probability of success. We're not necessarily improving the guarantee of an outcome. And so many people come into a negotiation thinking we're guaranteed to have a certain outcome, when that's not necessarily true. The more and more that you build your skill set, the more and more that you build your ability to ask great questions, as you mentioned, and remove yourself from this illusion of control bias that you have, the better, strangely enough, you'll be able to improve the probability of success. And I think that really speaks to what you've said here, is that people have this weird need for control on outcomes. And oftentimes it ends up hamstringing them versus actually helping them.
Yeah. And I know you've probably heard this analogy many times, right? It's kind of like dating. You show up on a date, and if you find the other person attractive, and then you start getting attached to the fact that you hope there's a second date, you start to act differently. You start to do things differently. You say things differently. And sometimes you end up becoming attached, where it's like you're only doing and saying things to get the second date. But the challenge is the person on the receiving end, they feel your attachment. We always tell our audiences that the worst thing that you can do walking into a prospect or a client conversation, whether it's an exploratory one or a negotiation, is the worst thing you can do is want and need something from them. Because as human beings, we pick up on that from each other. We know when somebody wants and needs something from us. And when that happens, our trust goes down. We become a bit defensive. We become a bit standoffish, and we become careful. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just very similar to the dating world.
Yeah. Isn't it strange? There can be so many corollaries between sort of like the mating dance of human beings and sales itself. I find it fascinating how both can be just so closely linked. Something that you mentioned there at the beginning also is super interesting to me. You said people come into negotiations with different biases. What's one of the most common biases that you think people come into the negotiation with?
I think there's a lot of biases, and we've done some studies on those, and we work with our clients a lot on those. But I think one of the most common ones, I'd probably say maybe 1A and 1B. Is that all right, Mark, if I do that?
Go ahead.
I think 1A would be loyalty biased, and 1B would be confirmation bias. So loyalty biased is we have relationships. And when we have relationships over a period of time and we've worked through the good and the bad of those relationships, you know, we tend to feel that emotion, that loyalty toward them. And so we become biased in the sense that when we hear other new information or competing information, we tend to defend the relationship. And so we'll listen then to confirm that we're fine where we're at. We're fine with who we do business with. We're fine with the strategy that we have in place. And most of that comes from the fact that we're just feeling that loyalty. And so we listen to confirm that we're okay versus listening to really truly consider a new idea. We call it, you know, you listen to disqualify. It's a human nature, right? We all listen to disqualify things because as soon as we can disqualify something, we're no longer on the hook to have to do anything different. And so those are the two main biases I think that occur in sales and in negotiations. From our experience and with our client, it's again, it's the loyalty bias and the confirmation bias. People are always looking and hearing and listening for information that confirms that they're okay. And then they will craft the story within themselves and they will filter the information they're given so they can come to the conclusion that they're okay, even if they're not.
Yeah. Confirmation bias, I think, is one of the most pervasive biases that exists in any kind of social interaction, whether it's negotiation, sales, procurement, crisis negotiation, whatever it might be. And that inclination to look for and remember selective information that confirms that pre-existing belief or that idea that you had coming in, it is super, super dangerous because it blocks you from understanding what's actually going on and what's really going on. And so for the listeners, just so that you understand, to break it down maybe a little bit further, confirmation bias is, let's say, for example, you were going to make a decision about something. You already had an idea about the decision that you were going to make. In fact, you probably already made up your mind about something. And now you go in and you look for data to support that pre-existing decision or that pre-existing idea instead of letting the data and the questions drive the decision that the data needs to drive instead of you already making up your mind. And it's probably one of the biggest issues, I mean, as Dan said, that I've seen in sales and negotiation. It's so dangerous because it really limits your ability. Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. One of the big things that I see a lot of as well is loss aversion bias, where people have this fear of loss that's greater than the anticipation of gain. They're more afraid to lose something than they are to gain something. Have you seen that in your work as well, Deb?
Yeah, I have. I mean, there's always that propensity where we become really careful about what's uncertain and the unknown. So even if something is presented to us as better, and factually it would appear it's better, we get caught up in the unknown and the uncertainties of it. And so what we do is, again, as I mentioned earlier, we will overestimate what we currently have and underestimate what we could gain by doing something different, just so we can avoid the unknown. You know, Mark, one of the things that you said, which I really liked, and I wanted to give an example of it when it came to the confirmation bias, is if you think about it in sales, a salesperson shows up and their number one role, we'll say, in that first meeting is to learn. It's to explore. It's to find out what challenges that prospect faces. And the problem is, though, as soon as that prospect realizes that you as a salesperson are trying to find their pain so that you can solve it, or you're trying to find their challenges and problems so that you can share your expertise, once they realize that you have that kind of intent behind your questions, it has a direct impact with the energy and the effort that they put into answering your question. And more often than not, when they feel like your question serves you and it's helping you find their pain so that you can solve it, they feel that biased. And so what they do is they pull back from their answers. They become much more cautious in what they share. And so a lot of salespeople always talk about the power of asking questions and how important it is to ask questions. That's very, very true. But you've got to be really aware of the biases that you have behind the question, because people know when they're being set up. So like, for instance, Mark, if I ask you a question right now and you don't know me that well, and I ask you a question about, you know, your business and how things are going, it's not that you wouldn't answer, Mark, but I bet you some of my questions you might be thinking, okay, why is Dan asking me that?
Yeah, what's the end game here?
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a great crisis negotiation coach. His name's Dan. And he says, ask questions that deserve an answer instead of asking questions that everyone else would ask. So when you ask questions that deserve an answer, it could never be self-serving. It always has to be focused on who you're asking the questions to versus trying to get to information that serves you.
Well, Mark, I love that. We call that, and that's spot on, Mark. We call that low intent versus high intent. So to your point and to Dan's point, low intent is asking questions that serve us. How do I get them to see my value? How do I get them to want to do business with me? How do I get them to share their pains and their problems? We ask questions that serve us. Prospect or the counterpart that we're talking to will figure that out. Versus high intent, and here's the big difference, and that's why I love what you just said, Mark. High intent is my objective in this conversation from a sales standpoint would be to determine how and if I can help this prospect, how and if I can help this business, and are they even ready? And then all of your questions flow into that field, into that parameter, those parameters. I'll ask anything I need to ask, determine how and if I can help, and is this person even ready?
Right. And I think that comes from a very different type of mindset, though, because people who are asking questions based on how they could help someone versus what they can get out of it, there's a totally different mindset there around, I'm confident enough to be able to walk away from this if there's not a fit. Right? I don't have to push on this. If there's not a fit, if there's not a need, if I can't help them, then there's no need for me to push. There's no need for me to get that classic commission breath when it comes on in sales. And that mindset that you go into has to be one of serve first, I think.
It absolutely does. There's three main mindsets that I think align in sales and in negotiations really well. The first one is what I've called high intent. You got to go into your conversations with how and if I can help, are they even ready? The second one is abundance. You know, most salespeople feel scarce. I need this deal. I got to build my pipeline. I need this negotiation to go well. I hope they see my point. That's a lot of scarcity. You know, none of us perform well under scarcity. So we teach abundance, which is you got to go in there. And to your point, Mark, you got to learn to take some of that pressure off yourself or you won't perform. You got to learn to realize that whatever the outcome is going to be, the outcome is going to be. You can't control it, but you can control yourself. And then the last mindset we talked a little bit about earlier today is detachment. You know, like if you're in the middle of a meeting, let's say it's a negotiation and you hear something in this negotiation that you didn't like or want to hear because you realize the other person saying it, it signifies either the negotiation may not go your way or you're going to have to give a lot more than you anticipated to get the deal done. And so what you have to learn to do is detach from whatever that person said so you can still perform in the moment. And what you do is when you hear something you didn't want to hear in the conversation, you just remind yourself, okay, that doesn't mean anything yet. And by using the word yet, because you know we all have that self-talk, by using the word yet, it gives what was said a feeling of impermanence, not permanence. And it's a nice way to distance ourselves in the heat of the moment during a conversation where we think it might be going a way we didn't want it to go. We have to ground ourselves with, hold on, let's stay in the game. I heard what they said. It doesn't mean anything yet. And then turn into what they said.
Brilliant. I love it. As we close off here, one of the things that I want to make sure the listeners understand is, what is the single biggest piece of advice that you would give to anyone in sales or negotiation work about negotiation that you absolutely want them to take away today? What is the single biggest piece of advice that you think would change their lives?
The single biggest, I'm going to give you 1A and 1B again. I'm sorry about that, Mark, but I think they're so important. You know, you and I have talked about the first one, which is you have to learn to compartmentalize the outcome. And there's probably 100 different ways it can be said. There's many ways it can be taught, but you absolutely have to learn to compartmentalize any outcome. Never walk in feeling and wanting and needing a certain outcome. You're just going to handcuff yourself. Number two, and I've thought about this, it's preparation. Professional athletes spend 95% of their time, if not more, preparing on the fundamentals day in, day out. Top musicians, you know, they spend 30, 40 hours a week, all right, practicing. And so in sales or negotiations, we may take it for granted that they're conversations, and they are, but you got to prep for them. The best way to become resilient and the best way to truly up your game is to prep for whatever you think might be thrown at you. Even if it's something that might be way outside the box, maybe spend a little time on it. You know, you hear about all these pro football teams and the hockey teams, baseball teams, soccer teams. What do? They prep situationally now. I think you got to do that as you prepare for your conversations as well. You got to prep situationally for whatever can be thrown at you.
Yeah, I love that, man. I mean, I wish I could give you a soapbox and put you on the corner of like a high traffic street or something like that and just give you a holy book to go start preaching this gospel, because I feel like this is the single biggest issue that most people have is they don't put enough prep. I mean, especially when you compare it to athletes, right? And they're reviewing tape and they're planning and strategizing and they've got game plans and one game plan falls through. Here's what we're going to do next. And I love the athlete example. I think it's the best one. Dan, this conversation has been amazing, man. Where do people find out more about you? Where do they find out more about your work?
Yeah, Mark, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed the energy of your program and I enjoyed your questions today as well. So thank you. If people want to get a hold of us, they can go to Lappin, Lappin 180.com. We have videos on there. We have content on there. They can go to our podcast, which is Breaking Sales. And then we're also on LinkedIn, Lappin 180, Instagram, and Facebook.
Amazing. For the listeners, just so that you know, I will link out to all of those resources in the show notes as well. So you can just go to negotiations.ninja and check out the show notes on this episode. We have them all there for you. Dan, again, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your wisdom. We greatly appreciate you being here, man. Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.